Our last speaker is Dr. Jinyang Wang from Project Hope. She is a registered dietitian who graduated from Shanghai Zhuatong University. Her title is School and Family-Based Lifestyle Intervention in Obese Chinese Children, a follow-up control study. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. Today, I'm very happy to be here on behalf of Dr. Wang Yanping from Renji Hospital, affiliated to Shanghai Jiaotong University School of Medicine, to present this topic. I have nothing to disclose. As you know, China is one of the fastest growing economies in the world, but we still have huge disparities in different regions. While children in the west part may still feel hungry, and the children in the east part, especially in some big cities, most of them are overfed. And according to a recent epidemic survey, in this year, we have 16% of the children who are overweight or obese. Maybe you will ask why in China you have the problem of overweight or obese. I think it can contribute to many reasons. For example, you know, Chinese people is becoming richer and richer in recent years. And when people have money, what they will do first? They might buy what they can't afford in the past. In the past, the Chinese people are starving, and now they have money to buy food. And secondly, our food pattern is changing. The traditional Chinese food pattern are mostly based on vegetables and rice, which are unlikely to make you fat. But now you can find fast food restaurants everywhere. And the children, they like fast food. So most of them are because of this reason. And the third one is because of our one-child policy. Although nowadays, if one of the parents are the only child, they can have more than one child. But still, in most families, we have only one child. And because of the only one child, you know, we have four grandparents and two parents. They all like to take care of the children. So they will never say no to the children. And that's why. So most of them are spoiled, you know. So that's another reason, the cultural reason. So this chart shows a survey in 2012. It is conducted in Shanghai. Shanghai is the biggest and most developed city in China. So our problem of overweight and obese may be the most serious among other cities in China. And you can see about a quarter of the children in Shanghai are overweight or obese. And according to WHO, overweight and obese are linked to more deaths worldwide than underweight. And if a child is obese in his childhood, he's more likely to be obese in his adulthood and more likely to develop chronic diseases. And actually, during our research, we already found some children. They have hypertension and non-alcohol fatty liver diseases. And the rate is pretty high among the children who are overweight or obese. So the objective of our research is to evaluate the efficacy of a lifestyle intervention in obese children with or without chronic diseases. In our research, we included 519 obese students from two schools in Shanghai by randomization, and their age were from 7 to 18 years old. In the intervention group, there were 245 students, and the rest 345 were in the control group. Our intervention includes three components, which are nutrition education. They are like in the form of lectures and parents' meeting. And we give out a nutrition book or booklets, leaflets to the students, teachers, and their parents. And we also have dietitian who designed a tailored diet for the students who are overweight or obese, because most of the children have lunch at school, and their lunch were delivered by we call the lunch company. So our dietitian they gave the design diet to the company, and they can deliver the designed food. And so the overweight and obese children have different lunch from the normal ones. And thirdly, we encourage the students to do more physical activities in school and after school, at least 20 minutes per day. And we follow these students for 9 months. These two pictures, one is our nutrition education book, and the other were taken when we were measuring the weight and height of the children. So our primary endpoint is the decrease in BMI, and secondary endpoints were the hypertension and non-alcohol fatty liver disease, which is defined by ultrasound. So after nine months follow-up, we can see from the results that in the intervention group, the obesity rates were decreased by 14.2% compared to a decrease of 3.8% in the control group. So we can see the difference between the two groups, which shows that our intervention really worked. And we also observed the decrease in blood pressure and non-alcohol fatty liver disease in the intervention group. So through the research, we can conclude that the school and family-based lifestyle intervention is effective in reducing obesity in children, because most of the children's lifestyle are impacted by their school, teachers, classmates, and their parents. So if they have the adequate nutrition knowledge, they can support the children to lose weight, and the children are more likely to succeed. And secondly, we think since we can reduce the prevalence of obesity, so the related NCDs can also be reduced through this intervention. So that's all my presentation today. Thank you so much. 谢谢.
So now we'll open the floor for questions.
Thank you. did. For the incentive piece, yeah, IRB approval was required, and that just helps to ensure the participants have rights, helps to protect their privacy and makes them aware of what the purpose of the study is and helps to protect them. So that was a piece with it. Yeah. No, it was pretty, you know, we also didn't collect BMI and things like that. And since we weren't doing it, a lot of it was actually conducted within the parents. That's one of the nice things. So when you go into the school-based approach, I'll just come up to the mic to make sure I can. So there's sort of trade-offs. That's a good question. There's sort of trade-offs between different environments you try to target. The school-based approach, you tend to have a captive audience. So you can go in there and you have access to, you know, hundreds of children, but then you have more layers of bureaucracy that you have to kind of go through. When you go straight to the mother and the family environment, they pretty much have most of the say-so. So, but it's just more difficult to recruit those folks. So you don't have that captive audience effect. So that's a good point. And then for the incentive, what I did was, it's a little bit complicated, but basically what it is for each piece, for each modality that they completed, each component, we awarded points. And then those points translated into dollars. So it was about $50 that they could get for completing the entire intervention itself. So there was an incentive there, and it helped out in terms of making sure that all the pieces were collected. We really wanted to have all the data there to really analyze what was working and not working in the intervention. I think I might have hit, did I hit everything? Or? Yeah. That's a good question. This was part of my dissertation, so you're looking at them. You're looking, I pretty much did, but we did have, with the university, we have Blackboard, which is a website that students can use to access course materials. So we had free use of that website. So one of the nice things that it offered, it wasn't the most pleasing to the eye in terms of navigation. It was a little bit clumsy for parents to maneuver, but not too bad. But we did have the IT support. There was not very much of a chance that things were going to crash. So I worked with a lot of the folks. Some of them were very, very computer savvy, so you had different levels of health literacy. Some were very computer savvy and no problem getting into it. Some of the mothers had taken college classes before, so they were kind of aware of Blackboard and how to get into those things. Other ones, all they really needed was just a general walkthrough. So I set up a list of 10 procedures, and I would just basically call them on the phone and walk them through how to log in. I also had written instructions in an email, so I tried to provide several outlets. Also, with the web, you can kind of lose that human connection. So I also tried to do the phone calls to everybody at the outset just to let them know that there was somebody on the other end and just to help increase the tangibility of the intervention itself, to make them feel like there was something there and it wasn't just all out in the virtual world. So that's another piece. With connecting that together, the process evaluation, we also did phone calls for that, and that helps to increase and let them know that there's a presence there in the discussion board. So those two things kind of help to do that. Sure, sure. Sure, no problem. About half of them were married, and the other half were single. They were primarily middle-income individuals and largely Caucasian. So it would be nice to definitely test this intervention with different populations and different cultures. We definitely had, but it was a pretty decent makeup, so we were happy with the folks that we were able to collect data from. Yeah?
I wanted to ask a question about, you mentioned the discussion board.
Yes. No, that's okay.
So were those, let's see if I get this right, were those synchronous or asynchronous? Is that the right word?
Yeah, that's a good way, and basically what that means is you can just kind of do it on your own.
Right.
And it was, we had set up initial questions, and they were basically open-ended questions, and they were designed to help the mothers contribute their own knowledge. Some of the mothers were very, very had a lot of, especially putting together recipes, like when we did the fruits and vegetables session, some of them were very creative and had very simple ideas that, you know, one mother may say, my child doesn't like any fruits and vegetables, and some other mothers had encountered that, and they'd help to help each other out. So it really helped to build a community. And it was, we had deadlines for when things needed to be completed by, but they could do it, they basically had a week to complete all parts of the intervention, all three parts. We had a suggested timeline, and then also, basically, they could do it on their own, though. But we had a suggested timeline, and for folks that didn't complete things on time, I would basically just contact them and, you know, are you, how are things going? Is there anything I can help you out with? Are you stuck? And just try to help them through the process.
Here's what I think you should do. Don't wait for that. Get in, pull together a you know, in your area a group of the social service and public health groups that are interested in that, along with the media, and say, let's get together and make a commitment that we're going to do something about this. And so that you have a framework within which to operate, and you may want to start looking for that title, you know, for your area that you're going to call your project, so that when you do have one, then you know who the editors are. You've already talked to them. Because if you know, I mean, we're newspapers, but you want to do electronic media and social media also. So, if you already know those people, like if you have commitments from the editors of your local papers and of your TV stations and your public radio people and so forth, then you can begin to list the people in your area who have taken charge of your health, who wouldn't mind talking to the media, what points you want to illustrate, what programs you want people to know about. And in each case, then you think about, if you have the social service people at the table with the media people, you social service people and community people can say to the media, here's what we can give you. We can help you find people to illustrate these stories. We will give you their names and their phone numbers, and which would make any journalist happy. And we also will give you a list of solid research that backs up these programs, so that a good journalist wants not just to put out a little fluffy story about somebody who lost weight, but they want to be able to say, this is the research and these are the points that this person's experience illustrates. And so if you can then have a framework within which to operate, then a lot of good things can happen. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
We kind of tracked who was hitting our website, and they were looking at it, and the public radio picked up a lot of these stories. They're, as a matter of fact, really going great guns with it now. We feel that by putting all these stories in a resource website, and we've let all the media know about it and so forth, we don't care who steals any of our stuff or who borrows from it. It isn't ours anyway. We just assembled it, I think that it has accelerated the coverage in the other media. We're such a small state that we all know each other, you know, and so I gave them all the copies, and then they called those people. I mean, those lobbyists are in talking to them all the time. And because we had a broad coalition, you know, a lot of those people were featured in the stories, and they were in the position to be able to do that. And they have, our state Healthy Kids and Families Coalition really is bringing these people together to get legislative goals on behalf of children. And so it's kind of all these pieces are coming together. And the media is part of it. And what I guess my main point today is that what I see in a lot of wonderful studies is that there isn't any thought about, okay, we learned this. How are we going to get this information to the public?
Yes, it has changed greatly. First, if you have a traditional Chinese food pattern, because now people can afford to buy oil. In past, when we fried vegetables, we don't put so much oil. But now we have lots of people like oily food, so they use lots of oil and salt, which are unhealthy. And this is Chinese food. And on the other hand, because of the influence of Western culture, children may like Western food more than Chinese food, especially the fast food. They may feel it's very cool to have this kind of food. No, at school we still offer traditional Chinese food. And actually in Shanghai it's abandoned that the school sells sugary beverage or other high calorie snacks. It's abandoned.
Any final questions before we end the session? Okay. Well, I want to thank our presenters again. And thank you all for attending.